Okay, ladies and gents, this week it is Joel Buzaid. Now, me and Joel went to school, and I've known his older brother probably since I was about 11 or 12. Pretty good footy player. And Joel's a hell of an inspiring guy. I'd be really keen to this for ages. And look, he's got and does a lot of motivational leadership training, speaking. So the biggest companies in New Zealand, holds massive leadership clinics. He's truly inspirational. And he's got a pretty good take on things. He is and does so many different things, including CrossFit, hiking. He's got a beautiful little family, and he's truly motivational. And he's someone that we all should inspire to be a little bit more like. So it's really cool to finally catch up with him. And I love finding out about what he's reading, what he's trying to do, and things like that. And that's where I get a lot of my inspiration from. So finally, it's a little bit overdue after about 2 or 3 years I've been talking about doing this. It is, I'm going to steal this one from Joe Rogan, the great and powerful Joe Buzaid.
Welcome to the JP Talker Show.
How are you surviving lockdown, dude?
Mostly with keeping it simple in terms of not too many expectations.
Yep. Meaning what, and you're not trying to achieve 50 things a day, or yeah
like, you know, normally I'd roll into like a Monday or, you know, any day of the week really, and progress for me is a big part of the happiness piece, and just trying to be a little bit less tied into that in terms of what a good day looks like.
And so you haven't decided to paint the house or build a sleep powder?
I actually oiled the deck yesterday, 2 days ago. And yep. I'm stoked because the sun's still out. So it's drying well. But nah, man, like not going hard. I'm just trying to reflect and just be with the moment instead of trying to create avoidance and distraction, you know?
Right. So how does a day in lockdown, how's that different for like a normal day for Joel?
It's actually like my wife's doing a little bit of frontline service work at the moment. So that's shifted a bit, but probably the main difference is that instead of going to work for 6 to 10 hours a day, depending, it's more like 2 to 4.
Okay.
Yep. And just trying to be really productive in that time frame, and then get outside, exercise, which always happened. But I guess the main shift is the work family balance, if you like.
Yeah,
it's gone from that end to the other end.
Yeah, man, it's fortunately, John's got the kids, so I can lock myself in the room and do my thing during the day. But a few other mates with two parents, both still trying to work from home with kids. It's a bit of a mission.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It is, man. I take my hats off to those that can execute that well.
Yeah. Because it's been a little bit stressful for the kids too. I mean, it's a little bit confusing. My older fella, he gets it. He's like, thinks it's great. My little one still wants to know why she can't go to creche and do things and why she can't see the grandparents and stuff. And it's be interesting to see the impact on them in a few years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great question to be exploring without getting too far ahead of ourselves. Because, I mean, I was talking to someone at Ministry of Ed, you know, before this all went down, maybe 6 weeks ago. And they were just talking about how the new NCEA format's rolling out and they hope they get it right, because if they don't, then it's going to impact. And then there's this, and it's just like, man, whatever we thought education was is shifting quite fast.
Yep. And so, mate, your education was kind of interesting, eh? So we obviously went to St. Pat's Town together, but I probably knew you first met you guys through the Moors out of Island Bay. And then
the Moors.
The Moors, yeah, through Jared and Patty.
Yeah.
And then on to St. Pat's Town. And But originally you left school, mate, and hit the deep south. You went to, did you go to Lincoln, or was that an external course, outdoor pursuits course?
We went to CPIT, Christchurch Polytech.
Okay, yep. And the goal was to walk up, come out and sort of hit the adventure tourism industry?
It's interesting, actually. The the decision to study outdoor education was driven 100% by the desire to be in the outdoors.
Yeah.
Unlike the urban like environment that I grew up in and that we all, most of us grew up in from Wellington, what I loved about the outdoors is there's no one out there that cared how cool you were. There was none of that going on.
Yep.
But also what made you valuable was your utility. So you couldn't be like a passive person in the outdoors. Like right. You had to bring some sense of utility to the team. And to me, I was like, I could roll with that. And I kind of liked that straight away. So, and then of course there's the fun, right? Like there's so much fun and joy associated with.
You had a pretty good crew. You had a pretty good crew from school go down altogether. Was it 3 or 4 years at least?
Oh, there was from your year there was like 4 or 5, and then the year in between you and I there was a couple, and then from our year there was about 7 of us the next year and did the same course. So friendships went from strong to stronger. So that was awesome. It was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and so coming out of Pursuits, you were actually in the industry for a little while, but I'm trying to sort of marry up from where you are now, motivational, inspirational speaker, motivator, planner, everything you do now. How do you think what you did at school and when you originally studied has prepared you for what you're doing, helping organizations and people now?
Yeah, awesome. So I think most of us all, maybe not all of us, but if you mean the same fact, sure, have or had a teacher that more than any other teacher believed in you or spoke some kind of possibility into what you were doing or what you were about. And I had one of those teachers, and I didn't realize it at the time, but that's what they were doing is kind of saying, you know, Joel, you can do great things. And the outdoors is completely that environment. It is an environment where there's external challenge, whether it's the weather, it's the terrain, it's the whatever the circumstances are, and somehow you've got to navigate that together with whoever you've got. So we'd take people into the outdoors to give them the experience of the outdoors, but what they'd learn through being in the outdoors is how capable they were as individuals. And so if you fast forward that into like modern day meeting room with corporate organization, the challenge is still the same. We still have external challenges. COVID-19 is a great example that we can't control. It's just like a raging river that's flooding. And through this challenge, we get to explore how do I respond and what is actually of any utility to me, my family, my company, my team, my friends, as we go through this challenge.
And so if you're approaching a flooding river, how would you approach that differently to, say, a business who said, hey, look, you know, we've just had to cut everyone's pay by 20% across the organization. Do you think you could come in and try and reinvigorate the staff or try and work on the culture of our organization? What are going to be the parallels between trying to cross a flooded river and trying to re-energize a team or get drive some outcome in a business?
Yeah, so the parallel really is as simple as both situations provide extreme levels of adversity or difficulty, right? Which is the territory of, in my opinion anyway, leaders. This is where we operate. This is why people go, hey, I need a coach because I'm experiencing adversity in my thinking, challenge or difficulty. I need someone to soundboard off. I can't do this on my own. And so just to keep it simple, it really is just that key component that there's a high level of challenge and we need to look at how we're going to tackle this. And I'm sure you'll know this from your professional experience is that if we take a step back and we go, what's the goal? What are we trying to achieve here? That's a good place to start, whether it's crossing the river or it's, you know, like front of mind for a lot of businesses at the moment is like, how do we shift and pivot? Like, does our product or service change? Are we going to keep doing what we've been doing? And if so, how does that impact the staffing model going forward? The questions that we're asking. So yeah, I think it's similar, but it's metaphorical, and you've got to use those metaphors lightly to inspire you as a leader, but not to be defined just by a metaphor.
Well, how do you define what you do?
I teach leadership.
You teach, but you're also, you touched on it before, you're also a coach as well and mentor.
Yeah, so if you think about like the ways in which you can create possibility, right? So you and I could have a coaching conversation now, which would, my role in that would be asking you lots of questions. We could have a mentoring conversation where I'd be more of the JP, do this, don't do that.
Right.
We could get your team together and we could facilitate, which, you know, there's no preconceived idea about where we're heading particularly, but rather we're going to figure that out as we go.
Yep.
I could, you know, plug you into a Zoom meeting that I'm having with an organization and I'll be in a training mode. So that the modes or what we do isn't really how I define what I do.
Right.
It's specifically the idea of creating possibility for teams and individuals and ideally organizations, because at scale we get to, you know, really help people impact the things that matter most.
Yeah. And so, like, on your journey, when you sort of discovered that, hey, I probably have learned all this awesome leadership, these leadership skills, and it's something I'm sort of passionate about, how did you transition from there into the business world or coaching and mentorship?
Yeah. It's a slow burn, eh? I reckon there's no like moment where it's like, oh, now I'm a professional that can help people. And before that, I was an amateur that wanted to do it. I think it's constantly evolving. And even now, as I'm sort of like, I kind of just like 15 years deep into my own being a practitioner. Like, I'm a practitioner. Like, after we hang up this call, I'm reading a book. I'm figuring it out. And I'm not trying to arrive. I'm just trying to deepen my wisdom so that I can be of utility. But if I come back to your question, which was about how do you get there? I think it's having a deep passion for wanting to serve people, and not just the commercial reality around that, but like, so for example, right now I'm doing like so much free stuff at the moment, and naturally you would, right? And it's just because that's what my leadership philosophy says we should do at this moment. We should all, if you can, then we should.
Yeah.
So I think to answer your question simply, it's about just getting in the trenches and helping people. Like, it's that simple. What do you need? What are your concerns? What are your problems?
Especially like with, obviously it's challenging times now, and I always draw a comparison to, like, can you imagine if this was a World War III, you know, obviously not now, but, you know, was it 1938, 41, where, you know, dudes are packing their bags, 18-year-olds off to war. Mm. So, right, what we're comparing this to is pretty simple. But look, how would you... I mean, how would you approach this? You know, there's people losing jobs. Yeah, you know, I'm pretty fortunate. My job's rocking through. It's flat out. But there's other guys who have to roll up businesses. Families, you know, it's a challenging time. We've been in the same house. As someone who probably hasn't quite got your skills, but is sort of interested in this area, how can they approach this? And is there a book that you'd recommend them to read, or is there... Yeah, do they sit down as a group and decide on some ways to work?
Yeah, good question. I think, like, and this is something that I'm teaching at the moment, and I call it three stages to resilience. And I reckon that at the moment you're either in one of these three boats, and most of us are in the first boat. And the first boat's called survive. And there's three sort of, like, I guess, key areas with survive, and one of them is about, you know, your own energy. You could call that mental health, mental fitness, emotional health, just looking after the golden goose, looking after you. The other one is become the CFO in your life real quick, like so quick. Like, we all know what it's like to live when it's sunny and it's summer and things are going really, really well. And right now, metaphorically, this is a winter that we're in. So get right in the driver's seat. That'll give you so much clarity and peace of mind if you can go, we've got 7 weeks, we've got 7 months, we've got 7 years, we're good, you know? And then the other one is like really like cranking up the connection piece. And I think if you do those three things, so Zoom, I mean, we're catching up with the boys just every Friday now from 9 p.m. through to early hours, you know, just having a few drinks online and catching up with people, doing whatever it is that we used to do, but we're just doing it virtually. And I think while you're in the state of panic, fear, worry, anxiety, unsureness, confusion, there's the big one, right? So a lot of people out there are working more than they ever had right now, and they're not sure if they've got a job, so they're confused, or they're doing nothing and they're still getting paid. So there's an element of confusion that goes with that. And so when we're feeling confused or we're feeling anxious or worried, I reckon you've got to keep it real simple, and you've got to go, how am I looking after myself? What am I doing to connect? Because that's an important part of being a human. And what am I doing to give myself peace of mind? So when I put my head on the pillow at the end of the night, I actually go to sleep and not think about, shit, are we even going to be able to eat next week?
Getting to sleep is a tough one, eh? I'm finding getting to sleep is a tough one because I'm in a room 8-9 hours a day. I get out and do some exercise and stuff, but it's still... I'm just going to shut up until kids are screaming. But I'm finding that really tough. So anything you could subscribe in terms of trying to switch off or clear the mind before bed?
Yeah, you know, one of the personal experiments that I've run with sleep, and I'll just put my hand up right now as someone that's constantly exploring how to enjoy better quality sleep. Like, I'm definitely not a master, and I've read a bunch of books and all that jazz. But I think what happens is that your brain's very good at going, okay, I see you've figured something out, you're getting good sleep now, and then it can backtrack and figure out ways to keep you awake, especially if you work a lot on screens. But something that could be useful that I've found to be helpful, at least recently, is that the measure of light, lux, you know, in a room that's even lit up, like an office room, there's about 1,000 lux. And if you get outside into daylight like today, there's up to 30,000 lux. And the difference in lux between a dark room at night and those two environments is what allows you to slip into what we call a deep sleep. And so if you've had 30,000 lux by going outside and letting the sun be on your skin for 20 minutes or so, and then you're in a dark room where there's zero lux, then what the research is saying is that you're more likely to enter into a deeper sleep than if you've, say, spent 10 hours in an office, a well-lit office, by the way, just at 1,000 lux.
So basically, I've never heard that before. That's pretty crazy. So living in Wellington is always a bit more of a challenge, though. Trying to get any sun.
as we
slip into winter. So what do you do? Do you try train outside, hit a run?
Yeah, definitely. With the local box closed at the moment, I've always enjoyed running. So yep. I'm up to about 4 runs a week, and then just throw in a little bit of, you know, CrossFit stuff here and there. Yeah, there's an online program, etc. But I think, you know, the more time that we spend outside, and I've got a bias here because, you know, no matter what you ask me about, I'll always, you know, reference back to the outdoors as one of the greatest teachers in my life. And there's just so many benefits being in the outdoors. And I think where we can start to evolve into something that's not our best, it's when we spend too much time indoors, generally speaking. But I think the ultimate, JP, So that's the survival thing. There's another piece called revive and another piece called thrive. And for 99% of society, we're not at that thrive piece at the moment. We might remember what it's like, but we certainly don't want to go there. But I think specifically around sleep, the reality is that how you and me are interpreting the world, circumstances, events, people, family, parenting, kids, all of the stuff in our lives, how we interpret that, what we make that mean, ultimately gives us, you know, increased peace of mind, increased joy, increased love, or the opposite, lack of love and connection, not much peace, lots of insecurity, and a real dampness around joy. And so that becomes the critical piece of the leadership puzzle, the parenting puzzle, the individual personal mastery puzzle, is how am I interpreting what's going on right now?
That's a real hard one. And you keep talking about connection, and what about connecting with your spouse, who I'm now seeing a lot more than I used to? So there's more opportunity to possibly disagree on things, or, you know, you're sort of weird tired. How would you approach that? Is it about showing more empathy and patience? Is it as simple as that?
I think those are both awesome visions. I think the first thing that a couple should do is identify what is now present that wasn't. And for sure, what is now present in every relationship is more friction. Let's just agree on that fundamentally and objectively, that there's more friction now in the relationship because of the increased time, the rules that have been bestowed upon us, there's increased friction. And so if you and, well, let's just put myself in the situation, me and my wife can agree that there's more friction. Now we can, and we go, that's a third party. The friction is third party. It's been bestowed upon us. Now we can collectively in unity go, how are we going to manage that?
Yeah.
And the empathy and the scheduling, the divide and conquer, or the united approach to parenting, all of that can come from that. But first we need agreement around what is actually going on.
As part of that, acknowledging something? Or, so you, do you deal with it better because you've acknowledged it and you both agree on it? Is that why?
I think that you deal with it better because it's not about her and it's not about you anymore.
Yeah.
So let me give you an example outside of this and we can come back to it. So you've got a team of people and you would have had to in the past had difficult, hard, necessary conversations, giving and receiving feedback. And whenever two people are having a feedback conversation, which ultimately has the intent of we want to grow you and make you better because then you'll be more valuable to yourself, the organization, our customers, and we all win. Unless there's a third party involved, and I'll come to what that means in a second, there'll always be the opportunity that that person, when you're giving it, will feel like you're attacking them in some way, shape, or form, unless you're very, very good at giving feedback. The Yep. moment you bring a third party into that, for example, the company's vision, values, mission, culture, ways of operating, now it's a conversation about you, the person, and this third party. And I think the same is true when it comes to parenting or leadership, is that when we bring the third party into it, now you and me are more likely to unite and discuss this third party. And ultimately what comes out of that is me and you are more connected and there's ultimately going to be more same pageness or agreement
yep.
around how to proceed forward.
That's massive. I'm taking that on board. Maybe that's that could be an interesting dinner conversation tonight. Now, dude, I'm still absolutely fascinated with your learning journey and those that inspire you and where you find your inspiration from. I want to know how, or actually here's a better question. How do I know if I need a coach or a mentor?
Yeah.
And because
I reckon, you could, please.
Oh, look, I was just going to say, look, I think I've said this sort of before that, Tony Robbins has become a little bit more mainstream now than he probably used to be. So it's a little yep. bit more accepted. You know, I think years ago he was sort of like snake oil, but now we're front and center. There's access to so many people, and including a couple that you've put me onto as well, which have been pretty cool. So what is something, or how do I know whether I need a coach or a mentor? What is the benefit? And then how did you work out that you wanted it or needed that in your life?
Yeah, so good, man. I was still at college, man, when I got my first coach. $150 for an hour. And that was years ago, man.
Wow.
And I remember parting with that money like it was all I could get together. And yep. Let me come back to that. But I think the first thing is like, so you'd agree with this, that there's so much demand on our attention now with technology, not in a bad way. It's great. You know, there's so much demand, but there's very rarely a great reason for us to stop and take stock, to stop and reflect and to go, how am I doing? And for the few people that do that and they go, far out, you know, I'm 36 and this is what I've done and I've written a book metaphorically and these are the chapters and this is what I've achieved. Some people will conclude at the end of that reflection, I'm actually not, not doing very well. I could be doing better.
Yep.
And when you arrive at some sort of conclusion like that, which, by the way, most people will avoid, they'll avoid that by distracting themselves with excessive social media, drinking excessively, well-timed drinking as well.
What's well-timed drinking? All of that.
Oh, you know, just as you're starting to, so for example, like there will be a time in your day or your week where you're starting to get closer and closer to how you're really doing, like at a deeper level,
yeah.
And you'll strategically self-sabotage and drink at that point, elevate your endorphin level, go to sleep, wake up and forget about it, and then you're back over here distracted and numb to what's really going on for you. So that's what I mean by well-timed drinking. But ultimately, it's like when someone takes stock and they go far out, I reckon that I'm not doing as good as I could be. What is my pathway to getting better results? Then coaching makes 100% sense. But the problem is the world is flooded with coaches that are people that are looking for significance themselves, and they're really just an ear. And it's a real shame, because I think coaching is, you know, one of the most beautiful professions that has entered modern day workplace, when there's a coaching framework that people can latch onto and use to navigate and enjoy and express culture. I think it's just phenomenal. But you know, my Instagram feed is, I try and curate it a lot, but there's a lot of people out there that just
mate, absolutely. But can you remember your first coaching session? And if you look back now and you can remember it, do you think they did a good job?
Oh man, I'll tell you, Dave Savage, he's a Wellingtonian. He lives in where does he live? I think he lives somewhere in the Wairarapa, and he runs a communications course for professionals, and he coaches. And I asked everyone that I knew, I said, who's the best coach in Wellington? And everyone pointed at Dave Savage.
Yeah.
And he was awesome, man. He was so good. So good. And really what I mean by good is his entire agenda is my agenda, and his business is asking great questions that allow me to do the walking. So he's not mentoring. He's not saying, Joel, do this, don't do that. Never. He's using his skill set around questioning to draw out what he believes is already in me. And, you know, I'd leave the coaching session having just parted with what was an extraordinary amount of money. And even now, like, most people couldn't bear to think of parting with $150 to spend some time talking, right? But man, I'd leave there more motivated than at any other time in my week or month.
Yeah, you're probably a little bit different than most, because I can imagine, you know, being at school and people around us taking on advice even from a teacher or a sports coach, that sort of battle differently, but going and asking a person maybe dig deep. So look, that sort of sums up you at that age. It sort of blows my mind at that age you even knew that existed or that was out there. How was that exposed to you?
It was probably just a combination of how I was interpreting the world at that time. Like, I've always sort of like been quite an introvert, especially through my early, the first part of my life, like quite introvert. I felt comfort and security and safety in introverted tendencies. And then realized that part of the way to access connection is through extroverted tendencies. But how I was interpreting the world at that time was, I'm going to go somewhere great, but I can't do it on my own. What are my options?
Right.
And as you'll remember, Tony Robbins was on the infomercials back then. And then I was like, well, who did he learn from? And it's like, oh man, far out, Zig Ziglar and then Jim Rohn. So I studied all of their stuff. And you just start, you know, as I said, being the practitioner in the thing that you're most excited about, which for me has always been creating possibility for people.
Yeah. And mate, where do you think, you know, in 20 years time, what are you going to define success as for yourself?
Yeah, I try never to answer the success question. Success has a, so, so I, did a bunch of study in neuro-linguistic programming. And for those of your listeners that are aware of that, it's kind of like the impact of language on our brain. And there's a part of success for me that is very final and fixed.
Can I help you up there? Give me a quick NLP example. Explain to people about NLP. Give me a quick one. A scenario.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to use the same words, and there's going to be two different meanings from the same words used. Johnny ate the dog. Right. So that's one.
Yeah.
The dog ate Johnny. So just by the order and the sequence in which you use words, it can create two completely different outcomes in people's mind. Right.
It's extremely powerful. I think I talked to you about it once. I'll get the certification.
There is so many courses now. One of the things about NLP, one of the barriers to it was it's the 21-day master practitioner course. So you had to go somewhere for 21 days and be in a learning environment for 21 days. Fortunately, the presenters are really good because that's what they're good at is training people. But it's like, who's got 21 days to be away from their business and their family and be spending huge amounts of money? You can do an NLP practitioner course now in 7 days. You don't get the international certification, but you get the nuts and bolts of it, right?
Yeah.
On Udemy, and there's so many ways that you can just kind of like slightly upskill in that area. And I think when we start to master our language, a good example of that would be, instead of saying, hey, babe, I've got to go to the gym, just shifting that for the rest of your life to, hey, babe, I get to go to the gym now. That will in of itself improve your emotional experience in life. Right. And it's like, we just got to make those graduations in our own psychology and thinking, that to think that language isn't a critical part of our contentedness or our ideal life, your word success, would be a very vital mistake, I reckon.
And so you don't measure success, but what do you try and do? Do you set goals then, or do you have just some things that you live by?
Yeah, so I run a 2-day event called Level Up, and the nuts and bolts of it is that you definitely cast a vision, cast compelling vision. And the way that you do that, without, I don't want to do it disservice, so it's way more in depth than this, but it's like, you go, what is it that I want in the future that I currently don't have in all the 9 key areas of life? So we're talking about self, we're talking about spouse, we're talking about friends, we're talking about money, we're talking about impact, whatever. And we cast a vision into those areas, and people get really bloody excited about it, right? And what's driving those visions is your values. What's driving those visions is your strengths.
Yeah.
It's who you are fundamentally as a person. But then we pull it right back and we go, if I was going to be someone that experiences a marriage like that, or if I was going to be someone that experiences a financial abundance like that, what would be the daily habit, task, tactic that you just do every day to keep it real simple? Because life can be complex, right? We all know that. Bloody complex at the moment. But what's that fundamental tactic? And once you get clear about the 9 tactics that are going to drive you towards an outcome or an experience that is really exciting in the future, but also equally right now, you can be like at peace with what you're doing.
Yeah,
I think that's the best way to live. Completely in the now, knowing you're casting a better future down the track.
Do you still get to a Friday sometimes and go, oh shit, I need a beer or a wine?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely, 100%. And probably enjoy it as much as anyone, but I'm just really careful about the dominant mental frame that I put around that. Like, I'm not trying to get away or escape, you know, like that's not the goal. You know, I know, everybody knows that through adversity, we sort of somehow come out the other end a little bit better. And so one of the great things is to learn how to embrace it and to go far out. What am I learning here? Who am I becoming through this? You know, if I get minimum wage at the moment, what is that teaching me at the moment? You know, you know, what is available to me in the people that I work with at the moment? Who can I learn from? And I think it's that stuff that really makes a difference.
Interesting. You're talking about, well, you know, it's hard to get away from this COVID thing, but what are some of the things, for example, that you've said, right, challenging time, you can't go out and see anyone face to face, and you just can't be face to face, can you? But what have you said, right, this is an opportunity for me to do X while in isolation lockdown?
So I kind of try and break my, I call it a practice. I try and break my practice up into sort of three key areas. So thinking, and then sharing, and then delivering. So the thinking part is about writing content. When I shared with you before, like the three stages of resilience, survive, revive, and thrive, like that stuff is all takes or requires one to step back and go, okay, cool, what's going to be useful? And then the sharing part is obviously having meetings with teams and individuals and organizations and sharing with them the opportunity that's available. And then the third part, which is the part that probably lights me up more than almost anything else in life, is being at the front of the room on stage, facilitating a group and actually delivering experience.
Yep.
As you said before, like, you know, being face to face with people is such a heightened experience there. And I just love that. So at the moment for me, it's about leaning into the thinking part. It's about going, this is, have you ever in your mind before said, man, I just don't have the time to write the book, write the white paper, you know, create 52 weeks of content for my social media, whatever that is. It's like, there's no excuses.
It'd be amazing if you did that though, 52 weeks of content for your social media.
Yeah.
Are you giving it a go? Well,
I just did a course on Jane Anderson, Australian thought leader. She runs a 2-day boot camp on how to create 52 weeks of content. That's why it was in front of mine. And you'll know this from your professional life, is like one of the things that we help people do when we've got an expertise is we save people time by going, look, I've already spent a whole lot of time figuring out how to do that. Let me share it with you.
Yeah.
So, you know, for Jane, it's about helping people to create content fast. For me, it's about helping people to fulfill their leadership potential fast. Like, let's not muck around with this stuff. It's like, what's the vital view? Let's get there now.
Okay. Yeah, that's that sounds daunting, but I guess once you break it down, right, it's always big do these big projects and you start somewhere, you're gonna end up somewhere. How do you get there as part of the journey?
Yeah.
Hey mate, look, probably a couple of things. So just I'm always interested to know like what you're reading at the moment, who you're listening to, and what your go-tos are.
Yeah. So I'm really digging like Brené Brown, Tim Ferriss, Tom Bilyeu. He has a podcast called Impact Theory. That guy, do you know Tom Bilyeu?
No.
Tom Bilyeu's like a, he's like a, he just wants to know what is the truth from a brain perspective. Like he wants to know how, give me the tactic, give me the specific. And so when he has people on a show and like people that have been on a show, like you'll be real familiar with, incredible personalities. He's just like such a good questionnaire dude, man. Like honestly, he is so well prepped. And if you are interested in anything with how the brain works and how famous people, quote unquote, are being successful, listen to Tom Bilyeu, Impact Theory. But I equally love the conversational wisdom that comes up from like a Tim Ferriss or a Brené Brown. What I love about Brené Brown is she's making, you know, like kindness and some of those softer skills.
I'm just recording and she nearly knocked over.
I'm making them dumplings. Jesus.
Now I have to edit the podcast.
Thank you, darling. just making some of those softer skills, which I always knew was key to unlocking your leadership potential. She's making them like more mainstream, the same way that Tony Robbins made getting a coach maybe more mainstream. So those would be a couple of the listens to. Reading, man, you know, I just follow my Blinkist sort of like, you know, auto generator. And I used to be massive into Audible and going deep. We have a book club, me and my brother and three of my cousins. So once a month we get together and we discuss a particular book, like Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Incredible book. That's going to give you philosophy beyond your years. That will be something you can tap into regardless of how you live your life.
So who's that by, Viktor?
But Viktor Frankl, incredible book. But like we'd all read it and then we'd come together and then we'd talk about, you know, what did you pull out of it? Where's the application in life and so on and so forth. We don't do that anymore. We still meet up and have the conversational wisdom piece. But what we found is that reading the book became a barrier. So we said, well, we're not going to read a book, but we're still going to meet up. And it's still very, very beneficial. So it's not really about the book per se, but just to answer the question generically, I always look to people that are demonstrating the results. So like, you know, like who's the best speaker in the world at the moment? I'm going to go and watch his YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Who's regarded as the best coach in Wellington? I'm going to get coaching by him. And it's just like the better your questions are, the better your life experiences.
Absolutely. Asking good questions is tough, though. It's not easy. It's
not, is it?
Mate, I'll give you one. If you, our time on Zoom might hit the level, but you can go to a remote island. You're allowed to take. You're getting chucked out there. You've been naughty. You're allowed to take one book, one movie, one album.
One book, one movie, one album.
Yeah. What are you going to go with?
Movie. I'll probably go with either. Can I just give it either or? Because man, you know, like I don't want to make these binary decisions.
I'll let you off, man.
So Shawshank Redemption or Blood. Then Blood Out, just because they're long.
Yeah, right.
Both prison movies.
Yep.
I have no idea what that's about. But just, you know, they're both long and just got such good story. And man, there's so many ways you could converse with yourself about that. Will probably be the first one. Man, I am just like totally on the bandwagon of 660, man. Like, went to their concert earlier this year. I was profoundly impacted by how good they are live.
Wow.
And as someone that just loved having them on in the car, like, man, yeah, really loved their stuff. So their latest album. And then probably, that's a really good question, a good book. Like in my bookshelf over there, there's so many books. Why don't I go with Good Leaders Ask Great Questions by John C. Maxwell, just because we're talking about questions. Yep. And that they can be hard, but there's a resource for anyone. Good Leaders Ask Great Questions, I think is what has been pivotal for me in unlocking some of my leadership potential, because if we agree that, you know, some of the best ways that we can help other people is by asking them great questions, then shouldn't we as leaders go and get schooled up on how to ask great questions?
How do you learn apart from reading? I guess reading the book's a pretty good start, but
yeah, there's some fundamental rules, like don't ask why questions. So like, and that's good for relationships as well. Like as soon as you say why X, Y, Z, people get on the defensive really quick, because you're asking them what's their motive or intent behind what they're doing. It's like, don't do that. Share with me,
right.
Describe to me, those questions are better.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good tip. If I'll remember that one in the next coming weeks when next time Jana's bringing me lunch. Oh, my Christian, why? I just comment on how great it is, and I've freaking really enjoyed it. And mate, how do we find you? Like, what's the best way if we want to interact with you or get along to one of your sessions? Obviously, we're in a bit of lockdown, but are you still doing anything online that we can sign up to or be a part of?
So I do a newsletter. It used to be every fortnight, but at the moment it's far more frequent because the feedback I'm getting has been really good. And my inbox is fuller now more than ever, so I'm really conscious about sharing this. But, you know, part of my leadership philosophy is, you know, no barriers to helping people. So the newsletter is like short, it's relevant, it's potent, and it's parenting and leadership and business and entrepreneurship. And it's just like, man, why don't I get more shit like this in my inbox? Like stuff that's really helpful. So that's why I wrote it. And just if you go to the website, joelbouzaid.com, joelbouzaid.com, you can sign up for that, like right at the top there. And then from there, like it's really easy to find out about how I do mentoring and coaching, what I do when I'm speaking on stage, if we ever get back to that. And then virtually online training. So this week I've got 5 training sessions with organizations, teams. A lot of them are in that space of survival. Right. They're in that space of, Joel, how do I demonstrate to my team that we care about their mindset and their well-being, and we can't provide them with the answers that they need at the moment? So that's me. I'm wedging myself into creating possibility in that
that's
space.
Really important.
So yeah, it's still happening. And I guess as well, for a lot of businesses, it's like going, we can still achieve a tremendous amount when we are live online together.
Yep. Oh, mate, look, that's super helpful. And the Level Up, your 2-day course has been on my list for a few years, but like this podcast has been, I think, about 3 years, I think I said to you, though. I've been in a slight hiatus for a little while with life and all those sorts of other things. So, mate, it's been awesome to finally catch up and have a bit of a yarn. And the next time we'll do, hopefully be actually in person. That'll be quite nice.
Yeah, man, that'll be awesome. And can I just, just acknowledge you for leaning into the medium of podcast. I think, more now than ever, people need to be consuming information that generates a sense of hope and optimism. And yep. There is so much out there, whether it's your best friend's genuine opinion, whether it's the news, whatever, that actually drives fear up. And yep. People aren't intending to do that, but it's what's happening. And I just want to take my hat off to you for the interviews that you've done and that you will continue to do, that sort of cast a vote for the other side of what's coming in our future, which is, I think, an awesome future. Yeah.
Thanks, man. It's pretty cool, right? Like it's everyone's relatively motivated and wants to jump on and learn and listen. It's when I started, it was a little bit weird, not that mainstream, but now like it's, you got 4 or 5 different podcast apps on your phone, and there's cool guys like you locally rather than all these international people, which is awesome.
Yeah. Mate, awesome, man.
Enjoy your rest of your day. Thanks so much, buddy. And we'll catch up soon. And I'll chuck these books and some recommendations in the show notes too, and a link to Joel's website. And do get his email because I get that daily. And then there's some good goodness in there, some gold.
Awesome. Thanks again, man. I really appreciate it, man. And we'll no doubt connect again soon, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much, buddy. Great opportunity.
Take care.
Thank you. Cheers.
See you, bro.